Thank you, Madam Board Member. For, first of all, to everyone who is here on time, fantastic. We will have words with those who aren't here. I'd like to introduce two of the people who will be talking to you. Larissa, who's the Director of Strategic Initiatives, and everybody knows Xavier anyway. But between them, we're going to be going through the process of the ALAC review. Heard some of this before, but this is a good roundup where we're up to and what are the next steps. Xavier's going to... Money. It's really... Maybe not. Procurement. We are hoping that Jen Wolfe, who was essentially the chair of the review team for the GNSO, will be able to stop by and actually share with us some of the lessons GNSO has learned from its review. And if we have time, we'll go into the slides that I produced. But first, thank you, Larissa, and over to you.
Morning, everybody. Thank you for having us. I'm here to talk to you about the at-large review that will be coming up. Next slides. So for the agenda, we'd like to cover today the review timelines. Xavier will talk about the procurement process, which is the next important milestone of this activity. We'd also like to talk to you about review scope and various other aspects of the review process that will be incorporated in the RFP, and back from all of you on those important. We have time, and I realize this is a very ambitious agenda. We'll also begin some conversations about the self-assessment and formalize some of the ways might take a look at the recommendations from the prior review. As Holly suggested, lessons learned. And since the last time that we spoke in Buenos Aires, there was actually a board action that confirmed a slower review schedule as we had anticipated at the time that we... So the review is scheduled to begin in April of 2016, and that means that the independent examiner will be secured and in place at that point. A group of people would be beginning their review. So in the meantime, we are preparing for the...
Don't listen to this. Sorry. I'm getting rid of this sound.
Preparing for the to kick off the procurement process, which is why Xavier is here to present that to you. And the other important activity during that process will be...
This is so bad.
The other important activity will be to agree on the scorecard. Next slide, please. So this is a more detailed look at all the activities and milestones that are ahead of us. And I would very much like feedback from this group. Staff would really appreciate feedback. Whether this is a realistic proposal of the timeline for the activities... So starting with the appointment of the independent exam March, and I, as I said, review being launched, we're essentially plotting out a roadmap to conclude with the delivery of the final report somewhere in the February of 2007. And the key activities that would take place in BC would be interviews and community surveys, which we'll talk about a little more during the methodology portion. There is time for the independent examiner to do their analysis and come up with preliminary findings. At each of those milestones that you see, draft report, publication of draft report for public comment, at those points there would be opportunities for the group, the review working party, to ensure that their understanding is accurate, their data that they've collected actual, and to collect any feedback about and feasibility and accuracy of. And with that, the final report, after the public comment process and after the analysis back from the community, the report that would be shared with the review worst and give this group the opportunity for the final report would be published.
My suggestion is we wait till at least unless there are any questions. Are there any questions at this stage? Ellen.
Thank you. Forgive me, I was a few minutes late, and maybe you've already covered this. What about the details of the timeline before this?
back to the slide just before. High level timeline, the details before leading up to the start of the review. The time between now and then is essentially sparing to launch the competitive bidding process, RFP, and doing the self-assessment, which is evaluating
the... I know what the parts of it are. I'm presuming that we will be seeing the solicitation for the reviewer has to input onto it before it's actually sent. And we also had earlier discussed the concept of at least, Holly and I or some subset of the group seeing the actual submissions and being able to comment on them prior to the time that the reviewer was actually selected. So I hope there will be involvement at both of those stages.
Thank you, Alan. So a couple of things. The purpose of today's session is to review a lot of the information that you mentioned. So the review criteria for the evaluation of the independent examiner, we've got that information to you. And also Xavier is here to walk us through the RFP process and the opportunities for, to weigh in on the selection criteria and how the whole process works in order to maintain the independent nature of the examiner and the review process. So if you bear with us for just a few minutes, we'll get there. Next slide, please. I don't think we need to spend a whole lot of time on this slide. I just want to draw your attention to the fact that this would be the proposed charter for the review working party, and this has been adapted from the charter that was used for the GNSO review working party. And in the interest of time, what I would propose is that you review these high-level elements, and then there would be a draft document circulated to everybody here in preparation for the next meeting, at which time you might wish to discuss this charter in more detail, adopt the charter. But essentially, it outlines the responsibilities of this group as a review working party to serve as a liaison between the and the independent examiner, as well as the provide input into the scope of work offer objective guidance throughout the review process to ensure that the findings and the recommendations that come out at the end of the report are accurate. Slide, please. Breaking down the activities and milestones of the review working party. So in the October number timeframe, it would be adopting the charter, confirming the timeline, the scope of work, the criteria, both criteria for the review, as well as the criteria for selecting the interviewer, as well as the methodology. The November through March timeframe would be spent on doing the initial assessment of the 2008 review recommendations. We also refer to it as the self-assessment, but that would be your internal evaluation of the success to which the recommendations had been in prior review, as well as considering various lessons learned from.
And what I will probably be doing is reminding everyone after this meeting, those who are confirmed as members of the working group, that we do have timelines and we'll be recirculating these documents so that everybody's had a chance to look at them, not at 8 o'clock in the morning when you're tired. And we provide feedback, I suspect, probably by mid-November, and we can start that.
Holly, this is Larissa. In the April-July timeframe, the critical activity input into the data collection, the surveys and the interviews. So some of the areas that were already brought up, I think at the last meeting, something for you to think about, goals from ALAC and at-large organization that be on the list to be interviewed in interviews, something for you to add, as well as another area having to do with a methodology that would be about is how to apply, what kind of selection criteria to apply to evaluation of the LSs when the independent examiner starts looking at means of assessing how effective those organisms are. It seems some sampling that would be it, and that would be very useful to get from the group as to what would be the other aspects in great detail, because less relevant at this point. Next slide. So at this point, I would like to introduce Xavier. Xavier is going to talk to you about the process as well as the steps in selecting.
Thank you, Larissa. Good morning, everyone. Do it in English, just because. Next slide, please. So I will provide a certain amount of information on the procurement process at ICANN, generally speaking, which, of course, applies also to this specific project of the review for at large and the selection of an independent. Very quick overview. We are going to conduct is a request for proposal, which is an offer to bid on a scope of services. So we're going to say we would like this work to be done and offer to bid on that, offer services, and it's going to be opened. And qualified vendors will say, yes, I want to do this service. This is how I intend to do it. And there's going to be, of course, a lot more information being provided, but I'm making it very high level at this stage. ICANN usually conducts an RFP, a request for a proposal, for any project where the spend is expected to be $150,000 or more. There's no magic in that number. It's a practical limit. It helps defining the amount of the number of RFPs we'll conduct. And it's also a threshold that starts to represent a fairly significant amount of work. And therefore, for mainly transparency purposes on how ICANN uses adequately the public funds, that we conduct RFPs. For those of you who may know commercial organizations, this is a very low threshold in commercial organizations. They would conduct RFPs at much higher levels than that. We conduct RFPs at a lower level because we want to demonstrate and guarantee the adequate usage of funds. And an RFP is a tool to do that because it provides competitive bidding. So what is the purpose of an RFP? Purpose of an RFP is to help obtaining the best and most adequate services at the best price. One of the objectives. The second objective is to support an independent supplier procurement process, which means that it helps with very public defined criteria to obtain bids by vendors who will be evaluated against those criteria and chosen on the basis of having been evaluated as per those criteria, and not on the basis of having been picked because they're the cousin of the cousin of the cousin. That's what independence means at the end of the day. We conduct also RFPs for projects where the spend is lower than $150,000, for key strategic projects, for projects that sometimes have a direct impact on the community. It can also be high-risk projects or highly visible projects, or projects that are relative to public interest. I'll mention just one that I know better because we can. When we chose to renew our annual independent auditor for the financial statements, is a requirement. Our financial statements are audited every year, and it's conducted by an annual and independent auditor. When we renewed that auditor, the spend was expected to be less than $150,000. But so important that everyone understands that we choose a independent auditor, that we conducted an RFP process to do that. And also it helped us ensuring and be able to demonstrate that we had made a very open RFP asking for a bid from any accounting firm. And we had very clear criteria. We had a very clear evaluation. And at the end of the day, Weber, that actually was meeting best the criteria, who actually happened to be the most expensive. It's not necessarily to choose the cheapest. It's to choose the most adequate vendor for the services required. But it was a spend of less than 150K. It was approximately $100,000 that we pay our auditors. But we felt it was relevant and necessary to do an RFP. So this is a relatively complicated slide, but the bottom line is the ICANN team here, including legal, including procurement, including the functional team members who are Larissa and Charla and so on, is supporting the process of selection of an independent examiner. There will be, of course, advice and consultation from the advisory groups, the OEC, the board, and, of course, yourselves. And the vendors will be responding to the RFP through procurement and through the evaluation process using the input from the advisory groups, an independent examiner will be selected. Procurement team will do a number of things. Do RFPs all the time. Right? So we have a certain amount of templates and documents to create the list of requirements. And of course, this is a functional expertise. The procurement team will receive from the functional team members who will themselves receive your input on what do we want to do, how do we want to do it, and what do we think the vendors need to know or have as an expertise to be able to conduct adequately. Yes, Holly.
I think, Alan, that sort of puts a diagram on your question. Working party, which is us.
Yes.
This shows how important it is that all of us have, if we've got feedback on the criteria that we think necessary, the timeline that Larissa was talking about was October, November. So that's when we as a group have to come up with a set of criteria. Now, that's obviously not going to be all of the procurement criteria. Correct. But if it matters, and it does matter that Xavier's team has criteria for what we want done, then, in fact, the timeline says you need that kind of feedback, say, October, November, on
yes.
the timeline.
Yes.
Thanks.
And obviously, in the process, it is key to very well define the requirements, because this is what the vendors are going to use to determine whether they think they're qualified and to demonstrate in their bid that they are qualified. So when you create an RFP process, you really need to really pay attention to the upstream part of defining the criteria, because this is driving everything that happens next. I would like to go to the next slide because it explains a little bit more why there is... can we go to the next one first? So, very important in an RFP. For both the objectives that we mentioned earlier, remember the objective is obtaining best suited vendor at the best price and obtaining an independent vendor. Therefore, there are various rules of confidentiality that apply to the group that proceeds with the selection process. This is these rules of confidentiality, notably, applies to the RFP core team, which is basically the staff of ICANN between legal and procurement and Larissa and Charlene Son, that applies to that group. Those rules are there to ensure that the people who participate into the request of the bid, into the evaluation of the bid, are independent. We sign, all the staff signs every year a conflict of interest document that says, I have no conflict, or I have a conflict with this firm, for example, because my spouse is maybe at the board of that firm. Things like that. Conflict of interest can be something completely legitimate. It's simply that you have a relation. So these rules are very, very important, because throughout the process, you want to maintain from beginning to end the integrity of the selection process to guarantee the independence of the vendor at the end. And more important, be able to demonstrate to anyone else And that means for all of you, you will be sensitive to the fact that anyone else outside of at-large needs to know that the examiner was independent, that it's not a friend of any of yours who's done the review, who's going to be sympathetic to at-large perfect, because it was a friend of a friend of a friend. So the independence is very important for the ICANN staff, but we're there to help you. For you, the independence should be key. And of course, it's key for you because you want an opinion, one independent, and you want to be able to tell your colleagues in the community that an independent review has been conducted. Therefore, the bids are received by a small team that evaluates those bids. What does the team do? Very simple. There are criteria. There are bids. The bids, each of the bids, are evaluated against the criteria, one by one, with a scoring of you meet the requirements or you don't meet the requirements. Sometimes the scoring is a more can be from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, for example, because there's ways to meet them halfway or ways to meet them fully or ways to not meet them at all. And the scoring is then summarized across all the vendors, and the scoring helps defining which vendor is. I mentioned earlier the RFP that we did for an independent financial auditor. We picked the auditor that has had the largest scoring, the highest score. Simple as that. And again, I mentioned that bid was actually the most expensive one. But it was scoring across the board, across all the criteria, highest in the group. Why is there so much confidentiality requirements to the team that evaluates? It's fairly simple. You want to have a limited number of people having knowledge of all the bids. It's a practical requirement simply because you don't want that anyone gives by mistake, by error, or by design, information about one vendor to another vendor. And it's very easy to make a mistake. I'll give you an example, because you may think, well, you have to really want it to hear your phone and say, you know what, I'm going to talk to you about the other vendor. This is not how it happens. But when we have, for example, demos of a service, that happens in an RFP process. Team and a few people at ICANN, we've gone through about 20 demos over the past month for an application, for a software. When you ask questions to a vendor, you can't mention the names of the other vendors that are in the bid at the same time because they're going to know, oh, our competitor is X. I know X. And I know what they do well and I know what they don't do well, and I'm going to twist a bit my offering to demonstrate how much better I am from that X. And then you have already a twisted bid and it's not independent anymore, because the vendor is going to make himself or herself look like he's better than the other one in a fashion that's not independent. So we need to be very careful in the confidentiality of the information from the time bids are submitted until after the examiner is selected. Because then the other bidders will be told, you've not been selected. And then everything can be open. But between those two steps, everything needs to be very confidential so that the independence of the selection process is maintained and the outcome is that an independent vendor has been selected. Any questions on what I just said, Alan?
Questions. You said in the case of the independent auditor, you selected the one with the highest total.
Correct.
Does your process require that?
No. I mentioned there were many criteria, of which cost. Cost was one of the criteria of selection. But there were many other things that were important in the selection of the vendor.
I wasn't asking about the cost.
Right.
I said, are you required to pick the one with highest total points?
No.
Let me be specific.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. I've participated in many such RFP evaluations.
Right.
There are times when, for whatever reason, you do not formulate the questions and the criteria
Absolutely.
Sufficiently so that you end up with someone meeting the numbers you know they are not the right bidder.
I completely agree.
Okay.
The criteria are important, strict, and define the work. The rating is never an extremely accurate, absolutely accurate exercise. So to your point, there may be some qualitative elements to the requirements that are very challenging to put a number against. And the scoring is only a tool. Thank you for that question. It's helpful in the process. The scoring is only a tool to help you sort out and compare in an equivalent fashion the various bids. But there are elements that are a little bit subjective sometimes, and therefore you may end up with having a scoring that's at 4.5 for one and at 4 for the other, but there are specific advantages of the one that has 4 versus the one that has 4.5 that is going to make you say, I'm going to pick that one, the one that has 4. But we know why. We will spell out why it is that highest scoring vendor. It's perfectly fine.
Thank you. That's far more enlightened than many organizations, is all I'll say. The other question is, and you've talked around it, but I'll be very specific, and I mentioned it in my earlier intervention. I believe it is very important for perhaps a very select part of the organization being viewed to have an opportunity to see the actual response. Not to participate in the evaluation as a first step. I'll use the exact same words I used when I asked this question the first time. I have completed many such RFPs. What you say and what you say and how someone not directly involved in the detailed process is... Oh, okay, I'll be blunt. Review committees can be manipulated. Create reviews, you can create proposals that sound very good. And those who are more familiar with the actual subject matter may recognize they're hollow, whereas someone completely dispassionate and not involved in the process may not quite see that. Everyone who completes an RFP does their best to make it sound good. So my personal feeling is it is worthwhile letting, in this case, you know, I, Holly, Cheryl, who has done innumerable numbers of these before also, to have an opportunity to review and submit comments to the review team. Not involved in that process at all. The response I got at that point from the then chair of the board committee was, sounds completely reasonable. I'm wondering, is it still reasonable?
So I'm trying to make sure I understand what you think the input is that review by anyone you mentioned is going to address or bring, and I'm not clear as to what would not happen if it would not happen.
Not quite comfortable. I don't feel quite comfortable answering this in specific detail. I have been involved in a review of a set of RFPs within ICANN 2 years ago. Some of you may know which review I'm talking about. Some of the submissions claimed a level of expertise we knew to be incorrect because familiarity with the group that was being reviewed, the entity that was being reviewed, and the specific viewers who were named. That kind of information may not have been fully available to impassionate review team, RFP review group, an unconnected one.
So that's
I can be clearer offline. I don't feel comfortable talking about names.
The bottom line, you just described an RFP process that was not in it. It was twisted with information that was confidential and should have remained confidential and became public. Said that the bidders were known. Isn't that what you just said?
I said the bidders were known to the...
Outside of the evaluation team.
But if it had been done purely within by ICANN staff, it might not have been known.
I thought you said the names of the vendors had been known, right? Outside of the evaluation team.
Let's talk off.
Yeah, okay. I was just going to say, could we stop this conversation? Right. I think you can talk to Xavier offline, but
I'd like to continue.
Need
to answer the question.
Yeah, I know.
The process that we are suggesting to guarantee independence does not allow anyone outside of the evaluation team to receive the bids and see them. Exactly the reason that I said earlier. We can't guarantee independence of the process if someone else than the review team sees the bids.
Let's complete.
Sounds good. So I think we're more or less at the end. I want to make sure I mention all the steps that are important. Let's go back to the process for a second. Yes. So this is the step where you and others will provide input on the requirements. This is key because everything that happens in the selection process is going to depend on that. This is how we are going to evaluate the vendor. This is key. The process then goes with preparing the document that will be made public to the vendors to say, this is what we need done. Please bid on it. This is the document that will be prepared there. There will be then, this document will be published on the website, on our website. If you want to bid, bid. And we're going to receive possibly questions from vendors. And when we receive questions from vendors, we ensure that we give the opportunities to all the vendors to ask questions. And the responses to those questions are provided to all the vendors, even if the vendor didn't ask the question. This is to ensure all the vendors have the same information. Because we can't give an information to just one vendor, even if that's the vendor who asked the question, and not give that same information to the other vendors. We need to ensure complete independence of the bids by everyone having the same information and therefore equal chances to be able to use that information to provide a response. So we're going to respond to questions. The vendors are going to submit their proposals. This is the respondent area. They're going to submit their proposal. These proposals will be evaluated one by one, then compared to each other. And that's where the scoring happens. And a selected vendor, suggested vendor, will come up out of that exercise. And it will be the evaluation will be submitted, the summary evaluation will be submitted to the advisory groups, meaning you, so that you can see this is how the responses came through, this is how they were evaluated, and this is who comes on top. So you will have provided input here, and you will see the output here. Okay? But again, to belabor the point that Alan and I were discussing, this part here needs to be extremely tightly confidential. This part, there's no problem. This is going to be public. That document is going to be public. You can review it before it's published. You ensure that all the criteria have been correctly spelled out. You have other things to do. I think that's the main things that I wanted to mention. Are there any questions?
Sean, you had a question, and Alan and Eduardo in that order.
Yeah, thank you, Oli. This is Sean for the record. I just want to ask the advisory group, who are they composed of? And then the other question is, at that stage of evaluating proposals, isn't there a way to make, I think it should be easy to make the proposals, I mean, those that make the that submitted proposals to be anonymous, even though the content of what they wrote will be available. I think it should be.
It's very difficult to do that. Very difficult
to do
that.
Even if you give them different identity and the.
We could erase the names. That would be a relatively straightforward exercise, but that doesn't guarantee anonymous content. And Alan, I'm sure, knows that as well. You have logos, you have, when a vendor says, I'm present in those cities, for example, all over the world, well, that's verifiable, right? I mean, anyone who wants to figure out a little bit, depends also on how known the vendors are. You know, when we did the audit, for example, there's 9 firms that are global in the world. Our criteria was we want a global firm. There's 9. Everybody knows them. So we can remove the names, we can try to remove the logos and so on, but anyone with a little bit of knowledge knows who's who. So it's very difficult. It's more complicated than it sounds. You had another question, I think. Oh, yeah. So the advisory groups. Can we go back to the previous slide because we showed that? So this is the advisory groups. You guys, here, board, in the from the board of the Organizational Effectiveness Committee. So it's a subset of the board members here who are particularly looking at the review process.
Sure.
And Rinalia Abdul-Rahim chairs that committee.
We know that. I mean, that question we've got on our wiki the name of our own working party, and then the structure improvement and who's on that. So that information is already known, but we can go over that later.
There was Alan and...
Alan, Eduardo, and then Sebastian. Thank you.
And we go back to the original slide we were on. Box in the upper left-hand corner, review input requirements. There's an arrow coming into that. I assume that's the standard boilerplate requirements you used in the GNSO review and things like that. I presume we're provided with that. We're not just given a blank paper.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you. Can't tell what's on the next slide.
We're telling you it's on the next slide.
Thank you. I'll revise my crystal ball.
Eduardo.
Thank you. This is Eduardo. Just a quick question. When you know, if I'm submitting an RFP and I lose, and I sue ICANN for that, saying unfair process, is that possible?
It's absolutely possible. Anyone can sue anyone for anything. Certainly, a vendor who thinks that he or she has been unfairly evaluated or ranked in the process can sue ICANN on the basis of the fact that he or she has lost money as a result of being excluded from an RFP process unfairly. This is another risk that we manage by having a very confidential process and a very straightforward process with clear criteria that are public. Because then we can say everyone knew what the process was. We document very strictly the evaluation process. There's nothing that just... try to document every element of the assessment to say why was that criteria ranked this way for that vendor. And when we put a number, then the number is there, but we also add comments as to the whys and some that led to the ranking, so that's documented and we can go back to it. We've never had that problem before except once. We had the problem once, and we didn't have any problem demonstrating that we had an independent process.
This is Eduardo again. So I'm asking this question because if you get sued, does that hold the whole...
No. No. If we feel that we have... a little bit out of turns, I should check with our legal teams, but my presumed answer is that we feel that we've adequately proceeded with the vendor selection process and the evaluation process, we probably think that we have the right vendor for our services that we are looking for. So we could proceed. Now... if, I guess the circumstances could drive that answer to be different, maybe. If it's a very prominent vendor, if there's information that's being then alleged of leaking information and so on, maybe we would need to investigate further, if you see what I'm saying. And maybe it would lead to require to stop the process. I guess it would depend a bit more on the circumstances. I think Sebastian had
we had
question.
Sebastian, but it has to be quick because Larissa still has loads of
yes.
slides to go through. So, Sebastian?
And I will. One question. Is it an open meeting, current member of the working party?
There's an open invitation. It will be circulated later.
No, I am asking now. Is it an open meeting
this
of
one.
The working party? I am not asking that. I am asking if this meeting here... it's an open meeting.
Yes, this is an open meeting.
Okay. Then please, Oli, when you answer to Sean that he must know everything about this question, we know, you know, but as a new ILAC member, he doesn't know or he may not know what you are saying that we know.
Sebastian,
I would like very much that, first of all, we don't talk about this group as the working party because we are not the working party. We are meeting open with people from outside the working party, first. And second, please be kind with all the people in this room. They don't know and they ask questions about the process to learn because we are here for that. And the last point I want to make, I will leave the room because I heard and I learned about this. And I know that I have friends who will answer the bits and it will be better for me to be outside. But I just want to be sure that we are open arms to new member of ALEC, any participant to this meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And at the end of this, there's going to be a link that's going to show every single document that Sean wanted. And this is the last time, not the last time, we're going to talk about it. So, Sean, there is her last slide has got a wiki that we actually, it's our wiki, and every single document you asked for is on there. Larissa, go ahead.
Thank you, Holly. This is advance to slide 16. I think it'd be useful to take a look what the standard, Alan, to your point, these are the standard criteria that have been used in starting place. The opportunity to refine these selection criteria, that's exactly what we want out. So I would invite you to take a look at these categories of criteria and see if there's anything that you feel, as well as offer any specific suggestions or ideas for how, particularly with category two, knowledge and expertise, if there is some evidence of this knowledge and expertise that you would like to include in the selection as the appropriate qualifications to. I'd also like to add that at its committee, we discussed placing some limits on independent examiners being able to conduct more than so. I think we'll hear more about that limitation, and that's really to ensure that there's opportunities for new to come in and fresh points of view and fresh perspective brought to the review process, doing all the reviews, all the one additional element that was just yesterday. Anybody have any thoughts or these would be the items, as Xavier indicated, that would be added in the request for proposal. This would be the information that the independent respond to demonstrate why they're qualified or how they're qualified, and so on.
Well, thank you, Larissa. And this slide is particularly important because we are supposed to be coming up with the sort of detail not only against that those general criteria, but if we have other categories that we think will assist in the review, will assist in getting the sort of answers that Alan would like to get, which is a really good review. I think we start with slide 16. Think about the qualities that we want a reviewer, the skill sets, and probably put it slide 16, details, anything else would be is something we really should aim for. Thank you.
So I noticed that we're practically out of time. What I would suggest, and Holly and I discussed this already, that all scheduled within the next two and the agenda for that call could be sensitive, which would be the psychology, as well as the all that information is available in the slide deck, or that you all have access to this that would be useful. And then next call to really these on basically during the month.
Any questions for Larissa before we let her go? She's got a full day ahead, as do we. His, her slides, Xavier's slides, will be on our ALAC review wiki page. So all of the information that we've talked about this morning will be available. There's also a list of members of the working party, the people who put their hands up some time ago to participate. What I'm going to be asking everybody for is if your name's on the list and after looking at these slides, thinking about it, you don't have time or you've lost interest or whatever, just don't confirm. But we want confirmation from people that you still want to be part of the working party. And we would expect in the next couple of weeks to have the first call to ask people to start contributing in the critical ways that Larissa has highlighted in terms of the methodology, in terms of the criteria, because that's our opportunity. And hoping everybody can we get it right. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Oh yeah. So, Alan's here.